What's up, everyone? This is Anthony Pompliano. Most of you know me as Pomp. You're listening to the Pomp Podcast, simply the best podcast out there. Let's kick this thing off.
Beeple is one of the world's greatest digital artists. He started as a graphic designer and animator, but has seen his digital art NFTs grow to become worth millions of dollars per piece. In this conversation, we discuss digital art, creator tools, NFTs, alternative asset classes, the concept of everydays, physical tokens, his ideation process, and the recent Christie's auction. I really enjoyed this conversation with Beeple, and I hope you do as well. Before we get into this episode, though, I want to quickly talk about our sponsors. First up is BlockFi. BlockFi provides financial products for crypto investors. Products include high-yield interest accounts, U.S. dollar loans against your crypto collateral, and a crypto exchange that has a no-fee trading schedule. BlockFi is also coming out with a new credit card. It's a regular credit card that pays you back in Bitcoin rather than cashback or airline miles. I'm an investor, I sit on the board, and I'm a huge, huge fan of BlockFi. I suggest you go to BlockFi.com/pomp. Again, BlockFi.com/pomp and sign up today. High yield interest accounts, US dollar loans, no fee trading, and a Bitcoin rewards credit card. All the financial products you need if you're a crypto investor. BlockFi.com/pomp. Next up is Remote. In 2021, every business is a global business, but how do you pay your global team and comply with international labor laws? Remote handles payroll, benefits, taxes, and compliance to help companies of all sizes pay and manage full-time and contract workers all over the world. No matter where your team lives and works, Remote's global employment solutions keep your team, your finances, and your intellectual property secure. Remote never charges percentages or fees, just best-in-class global employment solutions for a low flat rate. The world's top global companies love Remote. GitLab, the world's largest all-remote organization, trusts Remote to manage their global team. And so should you. Remote is funded by Index Ventures, Sequoia Capital, and a host of other top-tier investors. You can learn more about Remote and their new Remote for Startups program at remote.com. Again, if you run a remote team, you should be using remote.com. Next up is Choice. Choice is rebuilding the way you approach retirement, which starts with making it simple to include Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies in your savings. More than 20,000 Bitcoiners, myself included, have already signed up to start investing. Whether we are talking about crypto or stocks, Choice lets you trade real Bitcoin and Tesla in the same place, all without paying a dime in capital gains taxes. And if you want to hold your own keys all the way to the moon, you can do that too. Either way, Choice is on a mission to give you full control over your retirement savings. So head on over to retirewithchoice.com/pomp. Again, that's retirewithchoice.com/pomp and sign up for an account today. And one more thing, you know how I feel about this, but if you have a pro that manages your money, don't take any of their nonsense. Choice has tools for them too. Take back control today and visit retirewithchoice.com/pomp. Again, retirewithchoice.com/pomp. All right, let's get into this episode with Beeple. I hope you enjoy this one.
Anthony Pompliano is a partner at Morgan Creek Digital. All opinions expressed by Pomp or his guests on this podcast are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Morgan Creek Digital or Morgan Creek Capital Management. You should not treat any opinion expressed by Pomp as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of his opinion. This podcast is for informational purposes only.
All right, guys, bang, bang. I am super excited. I've got people here with me. Thank you so much for doing this, sir.
Hey, thanks for having me. Super appreciate it.
Absolutely. All right, we've been trying to do this for a while. We finally got it scheduled. We're finally both here. I finally didn't cancel.
Yeah. Okay, it's like, woo, we keep kind of playing funny. It's like, bullshit, dude. You keep canceling, you motherfucker.
Listen, we've been talking for a long, long time, and I really, really wanted to do it, but we had one incident come up where I had to reschedule, and he almost jumped through the phone and killed me, but we're here now. All right, let's start with your background. Everyone knows you as this amazing digital artist, probably the number one digital artist in the world today, and they're like, who the hell is Beeple? Where did you grow up? What is your background, and how did you get into digital art?
Sure. So just long story short, I'm from Wisconsin, and I'm, you know, a small town in Wisconsin. Went to school for computer science. About halfway through the degree, realized I don't want to be a programmer. Kind of was like, okay, let me just get through this stuff. And like, during that time in college, I was spending all my time making weird little like short films and art stuff. And this is back in, you know, 1999 to 2003. So I'm 39. This was a while ago. And so after I got done with college, I got a job doing like web design. Again, this is back in Wisconsin, for like a smaller company in Wisconsin there, and really sort of putting all my sort of real kind of like energy and passion into like, you know, the personal work outside of that job. And so 3 or 4 years after I started that job, I started the Everydays. And from there, I saw a big sort of, you know, kind of boost in sort of just output of work that I was doing, just the amount that I was learning, you know, very, very rapidly. And so after starting the Everydays, I started also releasing these Creative Commons sort of like VJ clips, which were basically custom little VJ clips that abstract sort of like loops that anybody could use for anything. And so from there, I started getting a bunch of like concert visual, like music artists sort of looking for custom concert visuals. And so that was like a huge part of the sort of like freelance work that I did over the last, you know, 10 years or so. And, you know, since then, it's kind of really just been sort of a slow, steady progression and people sort of like noticing my work and sort of, you know, bigger and better sort of clients coming to me and looking for work. And then obviously fast forward to, you know, 4 months ago with the NFT came to the sort of NFT and crypto art space. And that's when it really just, what the fuck is going on? So, yeah, it's been really pretty slow and steady up until the past 3 or 4 months here. Then it's been a motherfucking rocket ride. It's been a rocket ride.
All right. So let's talk about the Everydays. When did you start this? Well, you've done 5,000 or more of them. What was the idea behind doing the Everydays and how did you get started?
Sure. So those started in May 1st, 2007 was the first Everyday. And I saw an illustrator out of the UK named Tom Judd who did a sketch a day. And I thought that was a really cool idea. And I wanted to get better at drawing. And so the first Everydays are actually drawing. I wanted to get better at drawing. So it's like, okay, I'm going to do a drawing every day. And after a year of that, I realized I learned a lot about drawing. I was still very, very bad, as I still am today, very bad. That's not like I am actually really bad. And so I thought maybe I could take that and use it to teach myself a 3D program, which I didn't know any 3D program. And so I started doing a render every day. That's what it's called when you sort of make a program in a 3D program or make a picture in a 3D program. So I started doing a render a day using Cinema 4D. And then I kind of just, you know, again, kept doing that for the next 12 years. And so the Everydays are, again, a picture start to finish every single day. I'm not like banking these up. It's about 2 hours per day, roughly, you know, it sort of varies wildly depending on what's going on that day. But yeah, that's kind of, you know, sort of always been the case. And it's got to be posted somewhere online before midnight. And that's sort of the kind of boundaries of the.
Where do you come up with the ideas? You've got some absolutely epic things you've created. You've got some gruesome things, some inappropriate things.
There's some nasty things.
Some
nasty, nasty shit.
Where do you come up with the ideas?
So it's one of these things where I come up with the ideas a lot of looking at other people's stuff. Like I'm very much inspired by other people's work and sort of looking around and seeing different things. And it might be, you know, a different shape. It might be like, oh, I never thought of making, you know, a creature like that or you know, having this sort of scale or this sort of perspective. So it's really pulling from a bunch of different people, sort of a bunch of different digital artists work. That's a big piece of it. That is definitely a huge inspiration. And then I would say the other thing is just like current events. Like I'm very much into, you know, current events and sort of what's going on and inspired by politics and sort of internet culture and sort of what's going on in the internet and, you know, financial happenings and, you know, the tech companies and their sort of relationship with people. So there's a bunch of different sort of things, you know, themes that kind of come into play each day. But I sort of look at it as being almost like a digital cartoon or a political cartoonist sometimes. But instead of, you know, just doing a sketch, I'm using like the most advanced 3D tools to make something that, you know, would in the past take, you know, a bunch of time. Now, because the tools are so powerful, I'm able to do it, you know, just in a few hours.
Yeah. And so when you think about this, why go from doing like this amazing digital art that obviously you're very, very skilled at to then the NFTs? Was it something that you saw with the technology, with the market? Like what caused you to want to try the NFTs rather than just continue to post the digital art on Instagram and other places?
Well, I think with the NFTs, I mean, one, it was sort of like, okay, well, people are making a lot of money on this, if I'm being totally honest. Like, that is definitely, it was, and they're selling something that I never really even thought you could sell. And so it's kind of like, oh, this actually makes total sense to be able to collect my very digital artwork in a digital way. Because before, I would sell prints and stuff like that. And it's sort of like, that's one thing. You can kind of, you know, take my work and print it out. But like, my work is digital, and so it's meant to sort of be viewed on a screen. And so being able to sell it and collect it in a digital way, you know, is something that to me is very exciting and something I didn't really see sort of coming. That wasn't really like, oh, in the future, there'll be a way to sort of like, you know, collect this and have it be feel very natively digital. That definitely was not on my radar, as I don't think it was pretty much anybody's. So that to me is very exciting. And then just like NFTs in general really sort of like touch on all of the things that I'm interested in. It's got the art aspect, obviously, and a bunch of like crazy possibilities with that. It's got the technology aspect. I feel like I'm finally sort of using my computer science degree here. And it's got the investing sort of aspect of it, which is something I'm also have been very sort of interested in. Just in terms of different market dynamics and this and that. So to me, it feels like, you know, the most interesting combination of all the things that I'm like super, super interested in.
Yeah. And so when you first started looking at the NFTs, what's the first thing that you did?
So the first thing is a bunch of people sort of kept sort of hitting me up and being like, oh, you got to look at this NFT thing. You got to look at this NFT thing. So the first thing I did that I remember, and this was in about mid-October, is I sort of looked at Super Rare and it was like, what the hell? Like, people are paying like huge sums of money for stuff again that I did not think you could sell at all. And so the first thing I did was I talked to Pac, who is, you know, sort of like, you know, a friend, and I saw he was the top selling artist on Super Rare, and it was sort of like, what is going on here? And so he was nice enough to sort of give me kind of a refresher course of, or sort of beginner's course, or, you know, sort of introduction to the different platforms, how the technology works for minting, you know, why people are paying this much for it. And sort of trying to understand, like, you know, just a base level, what's going on here. And from there, I just dove like head down, just, you know, down the rabbit hole, as they say, and really just started reaching out to anybody I could, who would, you know, jump on a Zoom call with me and sort of like explain, you know, where they saw this going, what the limitations were, what people have done, what people haven't done, from the CEOs of all these platforms to collectors, to artists in the space, to anybody sort of pushing in some direction. I jumped on a call with and like, you know, sort of picked their brain.
Got it. And so when you think about the technology stack right now, maybe walk through people how you create the digital art, right? You talked a little bit about kind of the cinema 4D and the rendering, but then also what the different platforms are that you're using to actually mint this stuff and kind of your experience with the various platforms in terms of either auctions, open sales, or limited editions.
Sure. So in terms of making the art, yeah, like you said, it's done in Cinema 4D primarily. The renderer that I use is Octane. Otoy makes that. And they also have a render thing where you can sort of render it in the cloud. And they have a token for that as well. So that's the tools that is used to sort of make the artwork, along with Photoshop. I usually do some sort of paint over at the end to kind of, you know, do some compositing. So from there, I have the everydays are done and, you know, kind of ready to be minted. In my case, I sort of take those everydays then and then have sort of make them into videos that kind of sort of loop through and show the picture in a bit more detail and add a bit more information. And then from there, you know, I honestly have only sort of done two drops through, and they've both been through Nifty Gateway. So I've done actually three now, counting the Makerspace one. But so in those cases, in all those cases, it's sort of, you know, it's one of these things where you kind of, okay, here's the artwork, you give it to them and they, you know, have sort of handled that. You know, with places like Rarible, obviously you can sort of do it yourself, but it's really one of these things where you upload the artwork, you say the description, you pay the gas fee, and she's on the blockchain. So it's not a super huge lift to kind of get it up there, but, you know, each of the platforms obviously has their own, you know, sort of drawbacks and strengths and weaknesses. The one thing I will say is I'm pushing all of these motherfuckers to get fucking accept credit cards, because I really strongly feel that, you know, making this as easy as possible to bring in new users is going to be key. And the people who do that the best are the people who are going to have, you know, the most success moving forward.
Absolutely. And so when you think about the different ways you could sell your art, right, there are the limited editions, the open editions, and then also these kind of auction-based drops. Are there pros and cons in your mind to each one of those, or do you prefer one over the other?
There's absolutely pros and cons. And I think it changes too over time. So there's, and that's another sort of piece of this that to me is very exciting, is because I have all this work. I have a bunch of different work. And I'm making it, you know, literally daily, making more and more of it. But the way you sort of split it up can make a big difference for how much it sort of sells for. And it will make a big difference, you know, long-term in terms of your career, in terms of scarcity and a bunch of different things. So that to me is something that I really think a lot about, and things like the dollar edition of 100s, you know, trying to do things that people have never done before. That's another piece of this that, you know, is very exciting to me, looking at sort of, okay, what have people done in the past? Okay, I'm going to try and do something different that nobody's ever seen. That's, you know, sort of structured like that. And so that is something that, you know, really there's no right answer. It sort of depends on how much artwork you have, how much you want to put out at that time. But I will say that the things that I'm very much thinking about with that is, one, how can I keep some level of scarcity? And two, how can I return as much value back to collectors immediately as possible? And so that's one thing I see people doing massive open editions, and I think that's great. You're smashing on a lot of numbers, but when you have a massive open edition and, you know, 7-8 minutes, whatever, at the end of that, everybody who wanted one got one. And so there's not really that much scarcity left over. So that's one thing I would definitely sort of take into account, is if everybody who got one, you know, secondary sales and stuff like that, you've sort of removed some of that piece of the pie from sort of collectors being able to immediately sort of see some level of return on what they just bought. So I'm very much trying to make it so that my work is like a no-brainer. Like, it's like, okay, if I buy this thing, I know it's instantly like worth more than he's selling it for. So that's what I'm always sort of trying to do when I price things and when I think about how many editions to put out.
Got it. And so when you think through this, why is the NFT market taking off so much? Is this just a bubble? Is it unsustainable? But like, what's your analysis as to why there's so much interest and so much demand right now in this market specifically?
I think there's a couple of things. I think there is definitely a lot of hype. I think there's no way to not be like, okay, there's people are going ape shit. So I'm not, you know, so naive to think that that's not a piece of it. Yet at the same time, and so I think there's this thing where it's kind of, it may be a bubble, but it's sort of one of these things where I also see a huge amount of legitimate long-term value for this as an asset class. And I think we've only scratched the surface of different mechanics for how these can work. different utility use cases, because a lot of the utility use cases, you know, could be dependent on things that happen in the real world. And right now the real world's kind of, you know, everything's got a big asterisk around it because of COVID. So we really haven't even been able to see a lot of these utility use cases really sort of, you know, played out. I look at people who are sort of like, oh, you know, this, you know, if you buy this NFT, it gets you some backstage, you know, concert. Well, those concerts aren't able to like happen yet. So we haven't really even seen that kind of play out. But I think there are just so many uses for this stuff. And I think it's such an interesting new, you know, way to sort of store value that I think, you know, people are seeing that. And I think sort of long-term, like macro high level, looking at this as an asset class, I think this could be something that really sort of appeals to, you know, younger sort of investors. And I think there's nothing really written in stone that investors, you know, right now, the for the last 50 so years or whatever, the predominant way that people sort of invested was like equities. And there's nothing that says that has to just keep going forever. And I think a lot of younger investors, they kind of hate corporations. They really don't like companies. And so to think that they're automatically just going to invest their money in companies moving forward, like, I don't know that I would, that's not set in stone. Like, they could look at other things that speak more to them in terms of asset classes. And I think NFTs could be a huge, huge, you know, piece of that moving forward, that they would rather invest in something that, you know, they have a bit more ownership over, and they can sort of do what they want with a little more, and they identify with more than sort of, okay, I grew up, let me put my money in GE and IBM and all this fucking shit that I don't give a fuck about, or like, this doesn't speak to me, and it you know, it isn't really something I want to support in some ways. So I think that while there is a lot of hype right now, I think it also feels like we're still very much at the beginning of this.
So when you think through kind of what's working, what's not working, are there specific things, whether it's in kind of your formula for success or other things you see in the market where you're like, this is definitely kind of a winning strategy from the artist perspective?
That's a good question. I really think there's a lot of different like things, and obviously, like, you know, it's not just me who's seeing a tremendous amount of sort of, you know, growth and success in this space. So I think there's a lot of things that people are trying that are you know, working quite well. And I don't think there's one sort of like, this is the path. And I think, you know, it's evolving very quickly too. I look at like the Hashmask thing, and like that, you know, had like a massive, you know, sort of moment. And I think you're going to see a bunch of generative sort of projects happen from that. I think there's just a bunch of different mechanics that people have not tried yet too with the smart contracts, and making these sort of gamifying the ownership experience a bit more, the collecting experience. So I think that's something that, you know, there's still a huge amount of potential there. But yeah, I think that to me is sort of the fun part of this, is it feels like we're at the beginning and we're writing the rules. And so I don't think there's necessarily one, like, this is what you should do, release this kind of this. And also because each artist is different. Like, I have 5,000, you know, pieces that I spent 2 or 3 hours on. And some people have like, oh, here's, you know, I've got 5 pieces of work that I've done, but I spent 2 years on each one of them. You know, how do I sort of split that up? So I think there's really a bunch of different, you know, paths to success with this stuff.
What did you sell your first piece for as an NFT? You remember?
So the first drop that I had was in October. And I had sort of 3 pieces, 2 videos, and then the addition of 100 for $1. And so the 2 videos, one of them sort of changed based on the election. It had sort of an initial state, and then it was going to change. And this was, again, about 5 days before the election. So if Biden won, it was going to change to one video. And if Trump won, it was going to change to a different video. So it obviously ended up changing to the Biden video. And that's kind of how it will stay from now on. So that piece, those, both of those pieces, then I did another piece, you know, with that for auction, and both of those pieces went for $66,000 to Pablo.
You sold them for $66,000, but you also did a drop of $1 for the other pieces.
Yep. So those were $1 and it was an addition of 100. And so obviously those sold instantly, and then people can sort of flip those immediately right through sort of Nifty. This was done on Nifty Gateway. And so people can immediately flip those. And so my thinking with that was, okay, I know they're worth more than a dollar, but I figured maybe they'd be worth like $100. And so immediately within 45 minutes, somebody had flipped one for about $1,000. And it was like, oh my God, like somebody sold that for $1,000. That's crazy. And then by the end of the night, somebody had sold one for $6,000. And it was like, what the hell? Like that is, you know, was just absolutely insane to me. Fast forward now, you can't get one of those for less than $150,000. One went for $300,000. Like it is like insane. Again, those were a dollar in October.
So when you think through going from selling $1 pieces to one of your pieces just sold for $6.6 million.
Yes, one of those 66,000.
Yep,
one of those pieces that went for 66,000.
You know, Trump in all his glory with no clothes on laying in the...
yeah, I'm going to get straight up fucking murdered by one of these QAnon morons.
what happened? Why did it go for so much? Who bought it? Why? Like, what is going on with a $6.6 million NFT?
Well, I think like it's one of these things where the whole space is like, you know, going crazy. Like, this is not sort of happening in a vacuum. And I think people are sort of seeing, again, obviously the Christie's sale was a huge impact of that. And people are sort of, you know, seeing that this could be a massive, you know, kind of thing. And me being one of the, like, you know, most popular artists in the space, I think they're sort of attaching premiums to that. But there's also been different things that have kind of shown the price sort of, there's been different sort of metrics. I think the 6.6, if you're looking at an addition of 100 and those are going for $150,000 each, then you can take the fully diluted value of those 100 and it's like, okay, well, that's like, you know, $10 million for that piece of artwork or whatever, or $15 million. And so looking at in the context of that, you're like, oh, okay, I guess 6.6 is not just out of nowhere. And then if you factor in like the B20 token, which is this whole other, like, you know, I don't know if you want to get into that, but that's a whole other sort of thing that also right now is about $100 million divided by 20 pieces. There you kind of, you know, are coming to a similar number.
Explain what that is for everyone.
So the B20 is kind of a long story. You kind of need to know about DeFi to some degree, but I'll try and sum it up, you know, kind of quickly here. But so basically what it is in my second drop, I did like a 2020 collection. And part of that drop, I did 20 individual one-of-one pieces. And so what happened is somebody bought all 20 of those pieces kind of sort of secretly throughout the weekend and kind of, you know, sort of tricked everybody and ended up getting all of those pieces. And he did that for a very specific reason, because he then took those 20 pieces and built virtual museums for them in Somnium Space and Decentraland and a few other places. Built virtual museums, bought land, had museums built specifically for those 20 pieces. Then he took and bundled that all together into a smart contract, locked it into a smart contract, and fractionalized that into 10 million shares. So the amount with the pieces that he bought, which was about $2.2 million, and the land, all said and done, he spent about $3.5 million. And as of right now, that B20, and then he split it into 10 million, 10 million, you know, sort of fractions and made a token out of it. And so right now that token is valued at $91 million. If you take the like thing, and this was 1 month that he did this ago, he did this January 23rd. And so it's been on sale a little over a month, 5 weeks or so, and is now worth $91 million from that initial $3.5 million.
Wow.
So, yeah, It's very like,
it's great. It's securitization, it's virtual worlds, it's digital art, it's all this wrapped up, is why some people are so excited about this. But then you weren't satisfied, right? You're literally the best digital artist in the world. And then you said, I'm going to go take on the man. I'm going to go get in bed with the incumbent. And you went and did this Christie's auction. What did you do? Why did you do it? And how did it work?
Sure. So the Christie's auction came through Maker's Place, actually. They were the ones who sort of like brokered that deal and sort of like organized that. Then they reached out to me and were sort of like, you know, we want kind of sort of the leading person in the space to kind of, you know, represent this and be the first. And so I was super honored. And I look at it as sort of recognition. And the reason I wanted to do it is because I think obviously there's some validation from, you know, selling something on Nifty Gateway, but I think there's a different level of validation from selling something, you know, a digital piece of artwork that has no physical component through a 255-year-old auction house that is selling, you know, Rembrandts and, you know, Warhols. And, you know, 2 years ago they sold a, you know, Leonardo da Vinci painting and just crazy shit, like very much obviously a historical, you know, something that is very much part of art history over, you know, centuries. And so I think that brings a different level of validation and something that I think will really help boost the entire space. And to be quite honest, I think it already has helped boost the entire space. Just that since that's been announced, you've seen a fairly marked uptick in like, you know, other Nifty Gateway sales and, you know, across the board sort of interest in this stuff.
What is the auction? Like how does it exactly work?
Yeah, so the auction it started on Thursday of last week, and it goes until March 11th, 11th or 12th, I think 11th. And so it's like a 17-day auction or whatever. It's on Christie's, you know, website. You need to be sort of vetted by them. And so the piece that I'm sort of auctioning is kind of all 5,000 of the first everydays, the first 5,000 days of everydays in sort of one giant mosaic image. If you look at the very upper left-hand corner, you see the very first everyday, and the bottom right-hand corner, you see the 5,000th everyday, which was just last month. And so it's one JPEG, one massive, massive JPEG that encompasses all of those images. So, I mean, it's something you could literally look at for hours upon hours upon hours and never like really sort of be able to kind of see everything.
Guess what it goes for? What do you think the winning bid is?
Not guessing. A lot of people are trying to get me to guess. I'm not guessing. What do you think?
What is it at right now?
At 3 right now.
3 million?
Yep.
50.
Okay. So here's a little context. If it goes for more than 20, it will be in the top 10 highest sort of highest grossing or whatever, highest sold artworks by a living artist ever. If it goes for 20, it will be in the top 10 ever, like most expensive artworks by a living artist. So 50. We're getting into some wacky 50, motherfucker. We're getting into some wacky numbers here. So it is very, yeah.
Listen, why can't it go for 50?
I'm not stopping it. I'm not going to stop it from going for 50. It's just like hearing that. And to be quite honest, you're not the first bird who says that. I was doing it like right before it opened. I was doing a clubhouse with CZ from Binance, and he kept being 100 million, like right at the end of their like clubhouse. He's like, okay, great. It's going to go for 100 million. Bye. And it's just like, Jesus Christ.
No, CZ, he's rich. He could buy it for 100 million.
Yeah. So like, what the fuck is going on? But at the same time, like I look at it and it's like, that sounds crazy, but it's like, I don't know. I also see like just so much potential, and I just feel like this could be a really like just not just art. Like this really truly could be, even if NFTs captured a tiny fraction, just like with Bitcoin, even if they captured a tiny fraction of the traditional sort of like equity market, you're talking about literally 100, if not 1,000 times from where we are now in terms of total market cap. I mean, the total market cap of NFTs is maybe 250 million or something like that. Like it is, that is a drop in the bucket of what it could be.
Talk to me about the physical tokens. Before we talk about kind of the investment case, the physical tokens that you created, this is, I think you're the first and only person to have done this so far. For those that are just listening and not watching, Mike just got up and walked away. Now, oh, he's back now. Okay.
I'm back now.
All right. So what this physical token is.
Yeah. So these are the you know, sort of physical tokens that were sold with the last drop. And this is something that I think is to me really interesting and something that I'm excited to sort of explore more, because I think this is something that for a lot of people can be a great sort of entryway into this stuff, because it's one of these things where it's like, what the fuck? Why the fuck would I buy a JPEG? What the fuck is this stuff? It's like, okay, you don't really need it. You don't even, let's just take all those arguments off the table. What am I buying? You're buying this thing. Okay, that's it. I get it. Like, it's one of these.
For those people who are just listening, basically it is maybe a 1 foot by 1 foot, give or take. Almost looks like plexiglass, but inside of the plexiglass.
Yeah, it's sort of like, like a Kindle Fire type thing, you know, encased in acrylic. And so it really just keeps looping through the video. It's a video screen and it sort of keeps looping through it. And it's something that you can just put on your bookshelf and you know, plug it in and it just keeps playing. There's no interface. There's no buttons. There's no turning it off, changing the video. It's got a signed, this one's not signed or whatever, but it's got a signed number titanium backplate so that it shows, you know, your edition number. And then it's also, the video itself has a QR code. And what that QR code does is if you scan that, it goes to beeplecollect.com that has, you know, additional information about this artwork, and immediately shows who owns the artwork, and immediately shows how the artwork was made. And it's just something to sort of like, a community to kind of tie the sort of, you know, collectors together, people who like own this stuff. And so, you know, I wanted to do something because people have done sort of physical, you know, sort of things in the past tying NFTs with these, but it always seemed very, you know, sort of separate, like, okay, you get a print with it. And, well, which is worth more, the print or, you know, the NFT. And I wanted it to be something where they were very sort of tied together and they felt like one cohesive, very digital product that you wouldn't really sort of think of separating. So along with that, we wanted to do some really like cool packaging and something that would really sort of, you know, get people excited about, you know, getting this stuff. And so we did these, you know, boxes that really tried to put like a bunch of sort of like time and energy into making something that would be really fun and like exciting for people to unbox. So
what's in the box?
What's up?
What are the things in the box?
So the box has, you know, obviously it has the frame, then it has another certificate that sort of, you know, has the token ID and has some extra sort of like details there. It's got a cleaning cloth and then it also has a hair sample.
What is the hair sample? That's what I wanted.
Pubes. A lot of people are saying it's pubes. It specifically says there it's not pubes. So I'm just gonna.
Why did you put a hair sample in the everyday box?
So the reason is my.
Mike has gotten up and left again. Hold on.
my name, Beeple, actually comes from this toy from the 80s that you sort of cover its eyes. Oh, is it not doing it now? You cover its eyes and it beeps. Okay, now it doesn't want to beep, but this is actually a Beeple. Like, this is what I named after. This is what I named myself as a designer after, you know, 20 years ago or whatever. And so this is what the hair is from. It's not goddamn pubes, you freaking perverts. So this is its hair shaved off of this, like, you know, for people listening to this, like, it's like an Ewok looking little sort of toy that you can get off of eBay for like $20. They're not really that like you know.
I love it.
But that's a Beeple. And so that's what the hair is.
All right. So when you think about all of this, you started out, you know, whatever, 20 years ago, trying to figure out how to be an artist, how to use a lot of these technologies. And you've now kind of grinded your way to the number one digital artist in the world. What's changed? Like, did you go and buy a private jet? Did you order a bunch of Domino's? You know, like, what's changed about your life?
Honestly, nothing, because it's sort of like, I really still like see a huge amount of room for improvement, you know, each day. I think the pictures could be much better. And, you know, I think there's a bunch of different areas in that I think it could be better, from color, composition, form. I mean, I think there's quite a lot of room for improvement. So that's something that really sort of keeps me going. And now I think bringing in the physical aspect, that is something that I'm super, super excited about to start exploring, and something that, you know, as a digital artist, I never really thought of. And I think it's ironic that as a digital artist, this NFT technology pushed me into making physical art. And I think it's really going to do the opposite for the other side. I think it's going to take physical artists and they're going to look at this and be like, okay, how can I make my work more digital? And so I think you're really going to see this massive explosion of creativity from both sides, sort of pushing, you know, the technology in different ways. And I'm, you know, super, super excited to sort of be a part of that. And I think it's also going to be, you know, I think this technology is going to open up a new chapter in art history, and sort of, I think there's going to be people sort of going back and looking at this digital art that's been made over the last 20 years and sort of really recognizing that as a true art form and something that you can now collect.
Absolutely. When you think of this as an investment class, kind of like an alternative asset, I know you got a bunch of thoughts there. Is this something that's sustainable? Will, you know, institutional investors eventually have a digital art allocation? How does that work?
I think it will. I absolutely think it will be. I think, again, I think it's one of these things where I think collectibles in general, and art in general, art does pretty well. Like blue chip, if you look at the like higher end, you know, art year over year returns on stuff, it does quite well versus other asset classes. So I think it's something where right now there's a lot of speculation. It is very speculative. And I think one thing that people do need to be careful of on this is, to be quite honest, a lot of these NFTs will go to zero. Like that's just, if you look at like traditionally art, the very top appreciates quite well, and the bottom 90%, like they do not do well, and they will probably lose money. So it is something that, you know, just because somebody made an NFT out of something doesn't mean it automatically has value. Like that's definitely not the case. Anybody can sort of make an NFT out of anything. That there's no promise just because, oh, it's an NFT, like that it just magically has any value. So it's definitely something where I would look at people who have, you know, sort of been around a while and sort of, you know, that it's not just getting caught in the hype of, you know, the shiny new thing. So I think it's something that, you know, looking at like the B20 thing, it's sort of like this guy bought these NFTs and then he was able to sort of use them to do this other thing to actually make more money. So you really have a high degree of ownership over these things versus if you have a stock, it's sort of like, well, you know, that's it. Like you kind of, you don't have a bunch of like, you know, things you can kind of do on top of that to do what you want with it. And as we're seeing with like the GameStop thing is, even the rules that you thought you had about owning that stock can change on a dime. And so that's another thing that I think people are going to look at with this as an asset class and be like, maybe that, you know, could be something that could be an actual store of value in some respects.
How do you think about your portfolio? Is it all crypto? Is it all digital art? Is it in traditional? Like a bunch of people are asking online just in terms of how you think about investing and allocating your own portfolio.
So I'm honestly quite new to crypto. And like, again, like before this, I had bought a little bit of Ethereum in 2017, just like everybody and their freaking grandma did, and saw it go up, saw it go down, never really thought about it, just, you know, just a small amount to kind of, you know, jump in the game a little bit here. Since I've come to this space, I've definitely started allocating much more of my, and I understand crypto now, and I understand the value proposition of both Bitcoin and Ethereum much better now. Now I've allocated a much bigger proportion. So now it's about 33% of my portfolio is, you know, currently portfolio is sort of allocated to like crypto. The rest is mostly in traditional sort of like stocks. And like, to be quite honest, I'm not that, you know, sort of aggressive as an investor. I'm very much sort of like set it and forget it and sort of, you know, something that will just grow incrementally over time. And so most of that stuff is regular equities and mostly like tech stocks and some ETFs and stuff.
Do you buy art from other artists, or do you basically say, look, my exposure to art is through my own work, and then you just kind of cheer them on from the sideline?
I have not bought any other art, to be honest. I actually don't think I've bought a single NFT. And I think it's one of these things where I just don't have this like, I've been so busy like sort of, you know, building my own stuff that it is, I haven't had like a chance to sort of like dive in from like a collecting aspect to sort of, you know, start investing in this stuff. So it's one of those things where I also kind of feel like, I don't know, like I feel like there's so many, I have so many friends creating stuff. Like I feel like once I open that, I'm a little hesitant to open that can of worms. It's like, well, why didn't you buy my thing? Why didn't you buy my thing? Because I have a million friends creating digital art. And it's sort of like, I can literally, you know, wouldn't be able to sort of buy all the amazing stuff out there. So it's definitely, you know, I think it's super cool, but it's something I still need to process how I'm going to sort of like me personally, you know, I'm going to approach that.
All right. I've got five questions for you. We're going to run through these before
lightning round.
What do you consider your biggest personal achievement?
The Christie's thing.
Oh, all right. That's great. It's ongoing. It's live. Let's roll.
Okay. I don't know. Well, you were quick.
Second question is, what is the one artist that you would most like to collaborate with?
Aphex Twin.
Ooh, that's a great suggestion. Third question, what is the most important book that you've ever read?
The War of Art. Why? By Stephen Pressfield. That is a book that I would say probably, I never read books. I almost never, in the last 20 years, I've maybe read 2 to 3 books. So I just don't read books. I like reading the news. I like reading. I just do not like reading books. That book was very sort of like inspirational and something that I think was, I read it right when I started the Everydays around there. So I think that was a big, big sort of part of that.
All right. Next question comes from our friends over at 8Sleep. I got to imagine you're like me, last year. I've slept very, very little before the pandemic hit, like 5-6 hours was horrible. I got myself an 8Sleep, which is this like thermoregulated bed. I turn it real cold, sleep on it like a baby. Now I get 8-9 hours. I feel like a new man. What's your sleep schedule and how has it changed?
Yeah, it honestly is not. It's very a bit all over the place because I'll wake up after like 3 hours and it's like, I've got a million ideas, NFTs. What the fuck? Like, what's going on? Like, it's such a freaking crazy rabbit hole that I need to get one of those, whatever the hell they're called.
8Sleep. 8Sleep mattress. Better art with 8Sleep. That's what I'm going to start telling people. I'm going to say, people makes better art when he sleeps on an 8Sleep. all right, last question. Very important question. Then you get to ask me one to finish this up. Alien, okay. Are you a believer or a non-believer?
In aliens?
Yes.
Probably. There's probably some sort. I mean, I don't think there's aliens that we've seen, but I think there's probably aliens out there. I don't know. Like, I would say yes-ish.
Yes-ish.
What is your question? What do you think?
I think there's aliens, but they're too far away, so we're never going to actually come in contact with them during your or my life, so it doesn't really matter.
That's probably what I would say as well. That is probably what I would say.
Like existence and communication are two really big different things.
Yeah, you could be on the other side of the universe and it's kind of like, cool.
Yeah, don't come over here. We won't come over there and we'll all be good.
We're pretty far away. We could be pretty far away from the next person.
All right, you could ask me one question. What do you got for me?
What technology in the crypto space are you most excited about?
I'm going to bid $50 million on this Beeple piece at Christie's.
Okay, good answer. Good motherfucking answer. Okay, I like it. That's a wrap. We're out.
That's perfect.
Right. No, you heard him. You heard him. He fucking committed $50 million. You owe me $50 million.
No, somebody's going to – CZ is going to bid $51 million, so the bag's his. Where can we send people to find you on social media, find the Everydays online, and find more of the work you're doing with the NFTs?
I think if you just Google Beeple, you'll find, you know, Instagram and all the other – goodness there. So there's no shortage of places
you've arrived when you just tell people Google me.
Yeah, except I still don't have a goddamn Wikipedia fucking page. If anybody can give me a Wikipedia page watching this, there's your homework assignment. Get Beeple a Wikipedia page.
All right, Beeple wants a Wikipedia page. That means if you downloaded the podcast or the video, you listened all the way to the end, and you have the ability to create a Wikipedia page. If you hook people up with it and tweet at us, he'll probably do nothing other than say thank you.
He'll do a lot more and say thank you, but yes.
Awesome, man. Listen, thank you so much for doing this. You're absolutely killing it. It's so fun to watch.
Thanks, dude. I appreciate that.
Great work, and we'll talk soon.
Awesome.